I remember one of the first times when I was a kid and I went with my grandmother when she went voting. We went to Walt Whitman Junior High School and I stood with her in the line and we walked in the booth. And I remember her looking at the names and pushing the buttons and then pulling the little lever thing. And then I asked her, I'm like, hey, why did you pick those people? And while I don't remember the explanation, I was always curious about how people made decisions. And so voting is something that I think is very, very powerful. You get voting from your actions more than just the one day in November that you do it if you're in the United States. We have to look past the year 2020 and go forward and understand that voting is very essential to our lifestyles. And voting locally is super duper important. So to close out 2020, I decided to have an episode about voting specifically. And I hope you all enjoy it. A friend of mine, Raheem Francis Strayhorn, is going to help me with this conversation. We were live and on location, so it was a really good conversation. Very enjoyable. And I hope the information that you hear us talk about is worth your time. And check out the links in the liner notes of the podcast. It'll tell you how you can vote, find out about candidates, and to become a political candidate yourself. So with that, I thank you for your listening ear in 2020. Let's go. And today on Voices, this is the final episode of 2020, and I felt like it was important that from looking at all of the social media and just commercials, publicity, advertising about the elections of 2020, I wanted to talk specifically about voting and its value and how it's actually undervalued significantly and how we have to refocus on how to improve our voter turnout and to understand the value of voting. So today joining me is a friend of mine, and we're on location because we get to be on location finally. You know, it's the highlight of 2020 being out in public. But a friend of mine, Francis, we're going to talk about voting today, and I'm appreciative of him being here, but no person can introduce themselves like themselves. So welcome, sir, and I'll let you have the floor.
Oh, well, thank you. Great to be here. I feel honored by the invite. My name is Raheem Francis. What to say about myself? I'm an old school broadcaster back in the day, now a bit of a world traveler, a student of politics, and I'm here with the good man to offer my opinions, my thoughts, however prescient they may be, about the world we live in. So let's get to it.
That's awesome. And so, like, my biggest thing about voting is I choose to pass on actually talking about the current election and talk about what we're going to do going forward. So, for instance, I was fortunate enough to learn from a lot of social studies teachers and learn from different people who focused on teaching government, politics, and things like that, and political science. And so I had the opportunity to teach it. And the thing that I've noticed is, first, and this is, it's sad to me, but we only as Americans focus on elections when it's a presidential election year. I'm unsure if it happens like that across the world, but I know we focus a lot on the presidential election, and I think we miss the value of our vote when we only focus every 4 years. Second, I think if you are one of the people who focus every 2 years on congressional elections as well with the presidential elections, I still think you're missing the boat because these people are far away. It's 435 people plus 100 plus one, right? And so if we only focus on those small segments, we are really missing the value of what a vote is. And so today my goal is to impress or at least make the case for understanding not only should you vote every single year, but you should do more than voting so you can show your actions lead to an actually more educated vote, right? And so what's your opinion about the mentality about people voting or only paying attention truly every 4 years or in major election years?
Well, I understand it. You know, people have lives. And the whole point of indirect democracy is that we choose people to deal with all this stuff for us. But that requires a certain responsibility, a certain maturity in the political class that I don't think exists anymore. So now it's up to the citizenry to be more responsible, because in our hyper-partisan environment, everything that can be put under a political microscope is. For example, in this most recent election for my mother, I investigated Board of Education, the Board of Education for a local area. I don't have children, and her one beloved child is grown up. It's nothing to do with us. But you look at these people's websites, you look at what they have to say for themselves. Well, this one person's a Tea Party. This other person's about to have an aneurysm about the 1619 Project. And these are the people who are going to teach our kids, you know? And all of these votes matter, because there are, especially in the United States, crazy people on every level who want to do crazy things. And you, it's your responsibility. You're the only one who can stop them. You're the only one who can stop them. And that's where it starts, you know? I don't want any kids being taught how the Civil War was about states' rights, or I don't want to see any more statistics like a third of American teenagers don't know that it was Jews killed in the Holocaust. I don't want to see stuff like that, you know? And that's at least one reason why you have to vote for everything, because these crazy people, the ones who are tearing down mass displays, they're going to be the ones running for Board of Education. They're going to be the ones voting, running for City Council, trying to do all kinds of things. That's where it starts.
And you know, a very interesting thing is a lot of people don't understand, and if you pay attention to it enough locally, there are several barriers to entry to actually become an elected official, because it is actually my opinion that while I don't think everyone should be in an elected position, I think they should understand the process to become an elected official at some level so they can actually value the purpose of campaigning, the purpose of actually creating a community message, but then to understand the value of each and every vote, because in local elections, one vote makes the difference, you know? And that can be the difference between 51-49%, and I think people miss it. And so the thing that really gets me is, and you mentioned this a little bit about the election, is that we really miss on the local level, that if we don't address it on the local level, every one of those politicians that are in Washington, D.C., that are quote-unquote famous, they started somewhere locally doing something. Now, they may not have been a local official, but they started on the local level building a grassroots, and they got those people on that grassroots level to take them to where they are. Now, yes,
Columbia.
Absolutely, right? But yes, when they reach that national level, the people they answer to, quote unquote, changed from the local people to the people who fund the local people. And so this is where you have to understand, while, okay, you can say, well, my vote doesn't count in a national election, there's a thread of truth in that. So that means you have to actually make your local vote count for as many years as possible. So when that person who develops, I don't know, rapport, or they get the power that you would expect someone who stays in elected office for a while, and they grow, when they become on that national level, there is an accountability to you, at least, where you are loud enough and you are verbose enough to say, hey man, you're going to answer to us, and we're going to make sure you answer to us. So with that, I look at that and I say, well, people don't know, like a friend of mine, his dad ran for U.S. Senate. And so I talked to him and I said, well, you know, what all is involved in doing that? So the first thing, because he originally was not affiliated with a political party, the first thing you do is you have to join the fraternity, right? You have to choose a political party. Now, there's the Democrats, the Republicans, and you can join smaller parties, but if you want to win, right, which it sucks that this has to be true in a sense, but if you want to win, you got to join one of the big boys. So there's that. Then I was like, well, how much does it cost to run for an office? Now, think about it. This is a democracy, representative democracy, for the people, by the people, quote unquote. It cost $50,000 to file to be on the ballot. Regular people can't do that. So that means someone is paying for you to be there. So before you get to that level of wanting to run for a statewide office or something like that, now obviously this was the U.S. Senate, you got to start looking at the lower levels and seeing, well, what does it cost for me to put my name in the hat? Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, in many places in politics in the world, but in the United States, it's pay to play. And so you have to understand, am I willing to pay to play? And so with that, I look at that and I say, well, all right. If we're focused on the big thing, one of my first points is, why do we believe, and we've removed the power from local elections, but why do we believe that the president is the most powerful person in the country, right? And why don't we believe we're that powerful? Can anyone be president? I'm going to outright say no. And I'm not going to pretend like anybody can be president. No, anybody can't be president. So there's a lie in the democracy, right? But why do we believe that about the people? So I'll let you answer, and then I'll kind of chime in. So why do you think that?
Well, the presidency was never meant to be as powerful as it appears or even as it has become. It was meant to be a very much junior partner to the legislature, as was the Supreme Court. But part of this is just the natural way of people, and you even see it in Westminster systems, which shouldn't have a figurehead with that much power at all. But people naturally want a strong leader. It goes back to our primitive pack mentality. You want, you know, someone there. And a group of people, like a legislature, you're just not going to feel that that is... you're just not going to feel that sense of leadership. You want to focus all those primitive emotions on one person. So that's why we see why we want to see the president like that. Now, why he has actually become like that, it's a series of emergencies and really an abrogation of congressional responsibility by Congress themselves. They keep giving the president more power. He doesn't even ask for it. They just keep giving it to him when it's their responsibility. At this point, the president can declare war. Even though, not like officially, I declare war, but for all intents and purposes, declare war, when the Constitution is very clear that that is supposed to be Congress. President talks about renegotiating trade treaties. That's not the president's role. That is the role of the Senate. But the Senate gave him that responsibility. And I don't mean him specifically. They gave it to the president.
Yep.
And that's not how it's supposed to be. So it's something natural that people have done, and it's something unnatural that Congress has done that's led us to where we are.
And you know, my thing is I just think we care more about position and power, and that's why we kind of do that, because we want to have a face, because we live in, and I'm being honest, we live in a world where we have so much information that we don't know how to aggregate it anymore, and so we just let somebody else make the decision.
Agreed. And Americans are, especially, are super image conscious. So, you know, we care how things appear. We care how things look. I would say more than most people throughout the world. It's something uniquely American. We're all about, you know, image, selling the sizzle, all of it. That's us.
Yeah, and the thing that I think is most interesting about that, and this is my analogy on helping people understand why you should care more local than presidential, is it's the same thing as a CEO, right? You work for a big company. The United States is a big company. It really is. And you work for a large company and it has a CEO. Your immediate supervisor actually has more influence on you, on your pay, on your availability to move about, and your working hours than the CEO does, because the CEO not only does not know you, they don't actually care about you in general cases. And so the actions of your local supervisor or official means more in your life than the president or the CEO of the company. Now, the other thing that people miss is, if you think about it, in a large corporation, if a CEO changes, how much does it affect you? And the answer is probably not at all. Unless the company is about to, like, shut down, if there's a CEO change, which normally happens every 3 or so years, it's a regular change, it doesn't affect you. So why do we pay attention so much? Because the CEO is the spokesman and the face of the company. And we get that. But on a personal individual, my household level, I care more, and I think you should care more about who your local supervisor is, right? And so it is my opinion, if we care about those local people, I think we should change them as regularly as possible. Not all the time, but we should change them as we recognize generational shifts. Because if we don't change or we fail to address the leadership on local levels as generations shift, what you will find is you will find sort of the bristling and a difficult transition into things that shouldn't be difficult, in my opinion. So as far as the analogy, do you have any feedback on that, or do you have an analogy of your own?
Well, I understand where you're coming from, and you make an excellent argument. I don't like the idea of shifting people out just for the sake of shifting them out. I think that should be up to the voters. Now, I understand voters tend to, you know, not want to do that. Voters tend to stick with things unless they're so bad that they can't ignore them. But I value experience, and I value expertise more than a lot of our fellow people do, unfortunately. And I don't want to see that lost. Now, you have presented proposals in our casual conversations about how to maintain that expertise. So there are ways to do it, which I would be open to. But my main thing in government, the thing that I look for, I don't care about personality, I don't care about ideology, I want to see things done. I don't care how they get done. If good things are getting done, I'm satisfied. So if, you know, someone's been in office for 50 years, but they managed to pass a new stimulus bill, then I'm happy. If, you know, if they're not getting it done, then they need to go. But my most important thing is good government and the best way to do that. Now, yes, what you just said could be a way to good government. It's clear that our representatives do not understand technology. You know, they're like most, and, you know, forgive me, this is not meant to be an ageist comment, but they are like most old people when it comes to technology. And we need something better. You know, we have electronic elections that are not safe. We have these giant tech companies that are everywhere that know everything about us and don't seem to feel any regulations or any constrictions on their behavior. So it does seem to be impeding good governance. So yes, I can see the argument, and if it led to better government, I would be amenable to it.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that for me is like similar to you. We both have I don't even know if you would say put our foot in the pool of teaching, right?
Right.
And teaching,
right.
Education in general is something that it's literally a practice like medicine. We, and I'm being honest, while I feel like I know what I'm doing, we don't know what the hell we're doing, right? And so we look at this, and I think there is a difference where I think people misunderstand a simple premise of educating. And so you made a point about the educated voter. There's a difference between teaching and telling, right? And I remember a professor said something along the lines, but these are my words, right? So teaching allows the learner to experience why and how of an ideal, right? So why it happens, how, and you experience it. So you create a muscle memory in your brain, and you create a muscle memory in sort of your behavior, right? Because we condition ourselves with behavior. Telling is where you basically say something and you say this is what it is. And so the telling part is where you create, and I hate to call it like this, but you create mindless following, and that actually stifles progress. And the people who understand how to manipulate what that following is lead to things like those large companies, corporations that have monopolies on our information, on everything, and then it becomes almost impossible to alter it because while it's bad, it's the norm. It's similar to the abusive spouse. Like, but I get beat, and I wouldn't feel right if I wasn't getting beat, you know?
I'll tell you something. When that man was first elected, I thought the worst. Before I realized how incompetent he was, I thought, okay, I need to go off the grid. I need to hide myself. It was extremely difficult to go off grid. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. I could not get away from these juggernauts that are everywhere. It was like trying to go off air.
Yeah, man. It's just, and you know, the thing about it is that I will bring up points because while I'm not apolitical, I mean, I have a political ideology. It's just not in one of the two major U.S. parties. I remember when the election with Donald Trump, I've said it to people I thought he would win. And for me, it was a law of attraction thing, whether you believe in that or not. What we do understand is that if you hear someone's name enough, you don't hear the other names. And even so, when you walked in that voter booth and all you hear is Donald Trump, and you hear Donald Trump, you hear Donald Trump, and then you're like, well, he was a businessman, and he was able to mold his image into a successful businessman, regardless of the public news of the opposite of success, right? Because I wouldn't call him a failure, because clearly he's where he is, so there's some success in there, right? And so I look at that, and I say, okay. Then I thought about what I did not know about him was the fidelity of his followers. I didn't understand not only the fidelity, but the extremes that some were willing and are willing to go to. And who knows what we'll find out in the next few days for him.
That's because you grew up in New York. I grew up in the South. I have spent my formative years around these people, and I knew. I knew the way they thought. I knew, you know, a lot of people think it's not even transactional. It's a rage against not being in charge anymore. And it goes back a long way. There is a history of people, white people, and let's not pretend. There's a history in America of white people doing things to harm themselves because they thought it would harm minorities more. That is why we don't have health care in the United States, because Franklin Roosevelt tried to have a health care system, and it became an issue. Well, is it going to help the Negro? Yeah, it is. Well, then we don't want it. It's always been that way, and the president is the same way. It doesn't matter if he hurts them. It doesn't matter if he doesn't do anything for them. If he hurts liberals, if he hurts people of color, if he hurts sexual minorities, they're fine with it.
And you know, a thing that really is interesting to me is we so easily tout the God bless America and wave the American flag, and we're supposed to be unified under the flag, and oftentimes we are, right? We are in general when it's something that's apolitical, right? 9/11 is an example, right? It was something that unified. But the thing that immediately happened after that, and it says something about us as a culture, is that instead of doing a sort of a multi-pronged way of dealing with the issue. Okay, so we were attacked. We shouldn't have been attacked. I agree. In my opinion.
As a general rule,
I don't think
we
shouldn't have been attacked. But the thing that we didn't investigate is why we were attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we were attacked is actually part of the reason why there is a divisiveness in the country right now. If we actually look at why a foreign entity attacked us, then we can look at why the political parties are split the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at that and I say, well, at that point, again, this is where the local elections really mean the most. And so if we look at the local events and interactions that are happening that have ignited so many things in the country, all of them are local issues, local police forces, local district attorneys, local police chiefs, local mayors. So that means if we cared about those things on a local level, those things could be addressed more easily. So then the federal government, if we truly believe in states' rights, because I'm not opposed to that, if we truly believe in that, they would only be there to collect the national taxes and to protect us in a general. And that's the epitome of what I believe what conservatism is supposed to be, right? That's what conservatism is. The federal government stays out of our stuff. Just make sure you give us our money and protect us as we need to, and then fund our universities if we need a little help. And so we should actually take the time to focus on our local. And I will say this, it is my opinion that specific
political parties focus on local elections more than other major political parties.
Absolutely.
And that's where the loss is.
Absolutely.
So when you go to vote, because this has happened to me before, I voted in every election since I was eligible to vote. And I've seen where I've got the voter sheet and I knew about the political offices, but then you have the building inspector, the judges. You don't know these people. And it's not democracy anymore if I'm not informed about this person. And if you're gonna ask me on a form when I register to vote if I want to donate to the presidential fund, you actually should ask, should you donate to a local fund to educate the public about local officials? And I think that would be more powerful.
I'll tell you what they can do. It's something they did in my area in North Carolina, just a little expansion on this. They sent out a kind of booklet with all the people who are running and like a little bit of detail on them, whatever detail they were provided, whatever they want to say about themselves. It was free, like the Yellow Pages. And that way, you know, you hear what they have to say about themselves, but you have that information and
right.
Everybody gets it. And I mean, granted, not everyone's going to look at it. You know, you learn from teaching, especially teaching children. Even the bare minimum is too much for
yes.
many. But, you know, you have at least done everything you can at that point.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, for me, it's I'm aware if you provide the information for the people to read, they may not read it. But my thing about that is that if we truly want the United States to be a democracy, which it is my opinion, we don't, and I mean the powers that be don't, and I mean, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but I don't think the powers that be want a democracy in the United States. I mean, we have a representative democracy, so it is what it is, right? But because that's the case, if we really wanted people to know who the local elected officials are, and I know this happens in other countries, because I've heard about it, but don't quote me on which countries, we would afford each individual candidate a space in the social media, public forum, public access TV, to at least have one soundbite, visual, whatever, for them to say who they are. But we don't afford that. And so that's where I feel like the democracy doesn't exist anymore. And so I think that's where we sort of, we lose a little bit of ground on that, because we could do better, and I don't think we want a democracy. So at that point, we have to say, and with a few more questions, I have to say, people complain about the Electoral College. They complain about how Congress has a 15% approval rating. They don't like people being in office forever. And so people may be opposed to term limits that I think should make sense. But if you are opposed to those things, what are you doing to make sure the best people for the country, not for you, but for the country, are in office? So what do you think people could do or should do in that line?
Well, it's always going to be tricky, because politics as we currently do it is like a customer service job. It's a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week customer service job. And that's not going to be fun for anyone. So that in and of itself is going to put off a great number of people. That being said, I think there are ways to attract more and better quality people to politics. You would obviously have to lower some of the barriers to entry, some of the financial barriers. Yes, we would have to create more public funding for elections. So there's a few things we could do to improve the crop of people, but it's always going to take a special kind of person to want to go into it. And, you know, there's always going to be gaps in leadership, like the one we're experiencing now at one of the worst possible times. That's always going to be a risk, you know, because of the way we do things. But I think that's the best way to address it, personally.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things is, and we talked about this, and like, for instance, while I am not opposed to Nancy Pelosi as a person, I love all human beings. I was one of the people before, whenever the last election was, when they were up to decide for a new speaker, I was like, maybe they should have someone new. Maybe it shouldn't be Nancy. And then people are like, you're crazy. She knows what to do. She's done it. She's seasoned. And my argument is, one, if she's the only person that can do it out of the 435 people, but and if the house is split in half, the 270 people, then the state of our democracy is in a shambles beyond reproach. Because if she died one day, just died, what would we do? And so this is why I think just generationally we have to deal with that on an increased level. And this is why I think on a local level we have to not only encourage people to feel empowered, encourage people to be empowered. And when they do that, when we do that, it's something that will make us feel empowered of, I understand we're bombarded with stuff and we just want to check out, but you can't check out and then complain about your taxes being higher or the police abusing their power. You can't check out.
Well, I mean, yes, that's absolutely true. And I think there's a couple things there. One, people don't understand how government works.
No.
And they have these unrealistic expectations of what politicians, an individual politician, can and can't do. And when the politician is limited by, you know, the way government works or them being just one person or anything like that, people decide, oh, he's a liar, oh, this, that, and the next thing. It's like, no, he's not a liar. You just want him to do something, or her.
Right.
Him or her to do something that they can't actually do. So that's your fault for wanting something that's not possible. It's like if I hired you to be my assistant and I told you I needed you to get me a time machine. And then I fired you because you couldn't. It's like, that's my fault because, you know, I'm expecting the wrong things. So yes, the education in what these people stand for, but also what it is exactly they do. And if you want the government to do something that it isn't doing, then you need to find someone to address that. You need to look into people who address that, and maybe you need to look into your own ideology, because there are plenty of conservatives who are like, well, you know, this shouldn't happen, and why isn't someone taking care of this? Well, because you voted for people who don't want anyone to take care of it. That's what you voted for. And liberals the same way. You know, liberals are like, well, why is the government involved in this, and why is the government doing this? Well, because you voted for people who wanted the government to do more things, and this is one of the things that they decided to do. Bureaucrats, in my experience, and I'm a believer in government, I like an active government, but bureaucrats find stuff to do.
Yes, they do.
It's something that's very common in the European Union. They find things to do. They justify their own existence.
Yep.
So, you know, you have to think about all these things. You have to think about what you really want and the best way to get it, you know?
And you know, the thing about it is that it's unfortunate because, for instance, I taught in a high school, and local officials in the school board statewide decided that you should teach civics and economics in 10th grade instead of in their senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we think about that in the local level, one, you can't vote when you're 16 years old,
right?
But you give people a class that they can't relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're interested, they can't relate to, because they can't do anything with the information for 2 years. Minimum. And by the time that 2 years comes, they're so jaded and tired of school as a system that they don't care. Whereas if you actually had local officials, your school board, state school board, local school board, who said, you know what, if we actually want this democracy to work, we would teach civics and economics as a required class, one, not an elective, and second, we would teach it in their senior year of school before they exit, because this information we're giving them will be applicable and usable for them in their actual life.
Yeah.
Now, if they choose not to vote, that's their choice.
Yeah.
But they will know how to vote
Yeah.
and understand what the systems are.
Yeah.
But we don't question those systems. Because, oh, well, why are schools like that?
Yeah.
Because your local school board is voted by you and you ignored it.
Yeah.
And your state school board is voted by you and you ignored it.
Yeah.
Your governor is voted for you and you ignored it. And so the thing about it that is so significant is this is where you have to elevate and magnify the fact that your local school board official, your state school board official, probably lives within 25 miles of you.
Probably. Yeah.
And
yeah.
You don't know this person, and they're destroying all kinds of systems
mm-hmm.
because they've been either paid or they're doing it because it benefits for them.
Yeah.
And so we have to really care about that. So I'll let you have the final word on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a problem with education generally because it's so abstract, the things they teach. There's so little that is related to the actual world. It's something I've discussed with colleagues of mine when we talk about educational innovations. You know, why is math class just bare numbers? Why don't they teach about finance? You know, why don't they teach about how debt works and interest and things like that, so people don't think, oh, hey, free money, and, you know, a year later, I have all this debt, you know? But they don't, none of this stuff is made practical. Why is chemistry about big, long words and you know, diagrams? Why isn't it about cooking? Cooking is chemistry. Cooking is something everyone needs to do every day. Relate cooking to chemistry. All those things make it practical, but the way we teach is done in the abstract. And it's a big part of the reason why I think we don't get the results in education, at least in North America and Latin America. Well, I don't know from Canada, but everywhere from Canada south, we're not getting the educational results that we want. I read something very recently about the state of education, and they did make a very interesting point that mass public education is new in the history of mankind. We've only been doing it for 100 years out of the last 100,000, and we really don't know what we're doing.
Not at all.
You know, we act like, okay, this is how we do it, but we need to start treating it like the experiment that it is, because we are still in the experimental phase.
And not only that, because the students change all the time, mm-hmm. and the generations change all the time, education is the same thing as practicing medicine, in my opinion. But I thank you for all of that. The podcast is called Voices of My Brothers, Sisters, and People, and I just wanted to talk about local, specifically voting, but local elections and understanding your power and what a vote is and how, why you should care, and to just hopefully plant a seed for you to think a little more. With that being said, I always am thankful for anybody who's willing to contribute to the show, because we are put into the universe, and as we end, this is the last episode of 2020, as we end the year of clear vision, I will offer Francis the final voice. Specifically, you're the last final voice of the year, and it can be about anything you want it to be. It can be about what we talked about today, or it can be about anything that's on your heart. But with that, I do say thank you, and I appreciate not only your words, but your presence and your ideas, and I will leave the floor to you.
It was wonderful to be here. I really appreciate the invite. I'm glad I could share a bit, help a bit. So what I'll talk about is something I saw fairly recently when I was doing research on my book, which is never going to be finished. And it's a picture of a man who was lynched, and his face is covered. And written on the front of his clothing, it says, "This nigger voted." And that was the way it used to be. And it's something to really think about when it comes to voting. Because people would go to that length to stop you from voting. That means it must mean something. And things are better, so we don't have those threats. But I'm not going to lie. You know, I see the man in charge. I see the people that follow him. I want to pretend that... I want to say I'm not afraid, but I am afraid of them. I'm afraid of who they are. I'm afraid of what they can do. I'm afraid of what they will do, especially if they don't get their way. But like my fallen brother, I'm not so afraid that I'm going to let them stop me from trying to stop them. And I encourage all of you to think about him and all our fallen brothers and sisters who fought for the rights that we have now. And if you can't do it for you, you can't do it for the people that you love, cast a vote for them.